Today on Next Level E-Commerce.
There's now 30% more people that are going to the internet in earnest for the first time. So getting in front of those people was a huge opportunity.
Last year, we jumped 8 years worth of growth in the industry, pretty much, you know, overnight, more or less.
A lot of things are working out. And I think once we get over this hump, I think it's going to be a lot better as well.
You're listening to Next Level E-Commerce. Each week, we feature inspiring stories from entrepreneurs who have taken their business to the next level. They share successes and failures and what kept them going when they felt like giving up. And here's your host, Isaac Smith.
100 episodes. Wow. This is an exciting milestone. And I've got a fun episode for you today. But before we get into it, I just want to say thank you for sticking with me and for listening all this time. And if you're a newer listener or you haven't listened to that many episodes, thank you too. I'm just excited to be here doing this. And as you know by now, I'm trying to do something different with this show, trying to tell the real stories of entrepreneurship, trying to get past all the hype and get to the heart of the experience. And I really, really appreciate all of you who've reached out over the past year and a half or so since I started this podcast with messages of support, with questions. I really just love that part. Anyway, now this show today is a lot of fun. Instead of just one guest, I have three, all of whom have been guests multiple times and have been listener favorites. So I brought them back to have a relaxed, fun conversation, to find out what they've been up to and how the last year or so has been for them. My guests today are starting with John Murphy, who is on episodes 22 and 42, who was a stressed out, overworked solopreneur, and with some coaching went from working 110 hours a week to 10. He has been one of my most commented interviews. People reach out to me all the time saying he's been an inspiration to them. I also have John Warren, who is on episodes 4, 5, 81, and 87. He may be the guest with the most appearances, and he's my go-to guy for e-commerce marketing. He's also the coach who first suggested I sell my business back in 2018. And I've got Ian Bond, who was on episodes 14 and 73. He's a wealth and asset manager who's built a portfolio of e-commerce businesses. I aspire to be like him. Don't tell him I said that. He also does one-on-one coaching with executives, helping them do the same. Today, I have two exciting pieces of news to tell you. First, I have a new sponsor for the podcast, and it's my guest, Ian Bond. I'm very happy to have him, and I'll tell you more about it and what he's doing later on in the show. For the next announcement, well, you know what? Actually, I think I'll leave that to the end, give you a little incentive to listen to the whole thing. Not as if it wasn't incentive enough for this amazing conversation, but make sure you stay tuned till the end for that. Last thing before we get started, I really, really do appreciate you listening. Can you tell? So could you do me a big favor? Could you reach out and tell me, get in touch with me and tell me why you listen to this podcast and what you like about it? Seriously, that would make my day. You can email me at info@nextlevelecommerce.co, or you can find me on Facebook. And of course, like I mentioned, these guys have all been on the show before. You can hear their stories if you go back and listen to those episodes. But now we're going to get right into the conversation. Please welcome John Warren, Ian Bond, and John Murphy.
Congratulations to you, Isaac. Amazing 100 in the can and another thousand soon to come, I suppose.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it's really, I mean, it's kind of amazing. I didn't know if I would get here. I had a suspicion I would, but here we are. That's a big number, but it doesn't really seem like that much, you know. It's like I just been doing it.
Yeah, nice one. Well done. I hear that with podcasting, the first 50 episodes are the toughest. If you make it past your first 50, then it gets a bit, you know, you're more likely to go on with it, sort of thing. So a lot of people start and they don't get past that first 50. But if you make it that far, people tend to go on into like the hundreds. So yeah, it's a massive milestone though. Like, and you've been consistent with it too every week. So congratulations. That's the main thing, the consistency, I think.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Yeah. I think that's, what is that? The Lindy principle. I think the things that have been around tend to keep being around. I haven't heard. Yeah. 50. It's interesting. 50 is when I think it got more, the shininess wore off right around then. I think now it's just like, this is something I do.
Yeah. Yeah. And it also has to do with, so I've heard that number from a few big podcasters. It's also got to do with who have like done hundreds and hundreds or maybe even thousands who looked back. It's also got to do with the sort of, for a lot of people, with the momentum behind their audience size. So, you know, like anything, like building an email list, for example, it starts very slow and then that curve starts to take off. And so a lot of people say 50 up to 50, it's really slow. Like, you know, you don't have many subscribers, you know, you don't really know if you're doing the right thing or not. You know, cause that's the funny thing about podcasts. Hey, you don't get a lot of feedback on a podcast, right? Yeah. Cause you don't have that one-to-one interaction with your audience or your listeners. Like you do, like if you send people out emails, for example, or blog content, people can leave a comment, or you put a video on YouTube, people can leave a comment and tell you whether it sucks or not. But you don't have that with podcasts. Like you get very little interaction. And so you're kind of off in your own little world there talking to people and going, well, does anybody actually like this or not? And you can only really go by,
yeah,
am I getting more and more subscribers or is it dying off? Like what's going on here? So it's an interesting medium, I think.
Yeah, it is weird. It's very different than I expected. Of course, I didn't really know what to expect going in, but like early on, I got a lot of feedback. I'm not really sure why. I guess because it was new and people were, you know, interested in commenting, but that just sort of died off. But every now and then, I'll get some feedback. Like, what was it? Last Thursday, I got a long email from a guy who's like, I've been listening since the very first episode. Thanks for doing this. I'm like, wow, I've never met this person. Like,
yeah.
This is, wow, cool. Thanks, cool. Man.
I did a first season. I did 26 episodes back in 19. And it's amazing to me that people that dial into you, they will consume everything that you do. And then they reach out to you and you, like, you have no idea that they've been stalking you. And, you know, they know the stuff that you said. It's absolutely amazing to me. And I'll just reinforce something John said. You know, I'm a big walker, particularly on weekends, and I look at my go-to podcasts that where I can, you know, walk for 75 minutes or something like that. I look at the go-to ones and I'll say, you know, I these are the people I'm going to listen to when I go walk. Sometimes they have a 25 minute or a 30 minute, and sometimes I get lucky and I get the whole time frame. And anybody who's new and unproven and doesn't have a whole, I don't want to say a whole catalog, but any consistent history, you know, I'm just less likely to listen to them because I don't know what I'm going to get. And I don't want to fumble around while I'm walking to try to figure out, you know, is this something that I want to listen to or I don't want to listen to? And, you know, you're in my repertoire. So, you know, congratulations. I think it's great.
Well, thanks, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very, very interesting that the other thing that's interesting is I thought more people would be interactive. Like if I said, you know, like, hey guys, check out this thing I'm doing, go to this link. For some reason, I thought people would actually do that. But they don't. Well, a few do, but it's interesting. But what I have, here's what I've learned is it's, you don't get a lot of small action takers, but like, you know, I'm doing the bookkeeping business. I have this team building thing and some other things going on. The people who come work with us, come hire us, they reference, oh yeah, you said this on the podcast, you know, 3 weeks ago or whatever. Like, oh, you listen. Oh, wow. So what I've discovered is it's a lot deeper than it is wide. I think, at least in my experience, what you're doing is showing up every week and making a deeper connection with someone. And that is great when you're, you know, who knows what we're going to do with people, you know, yeah, sure, we'll do your bookkeeping, but who knows where that can go, and build a strong relationship that way. That's been kind of I think I just learned that just a few months ago, that it's built up over time.
Well, I can tell you that at least once a week, somebody reaches out to me that I don't know on Facebook Messenger, ask for a friend request. And they normally begin with saying, I heard you on Isaac's podcast. And then they'll just maybe ask me questions or something. But how they introduce themselves. This is how I know you.
Yeah.
And then they'll say, hey, do you mind if I just pick your brain? But it's at least once a week. And it's always, really? I heard you on Isaac's podcast. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. I love hearing this.
And it's not like I'm putting myself out there. I don't sell anything. I don't have a course. Mm-hmm. So I don't like coach people or anything. But they heard me on your podcast, and they're going, oh, maybe I'll just reach out and ask this guy something. But it's at least once a week.
Wow. That's really cool.
That's the great thing about
like not having that real-time that feedback. That's
really cool. Every now and then I'll hear somebody say that somebody reached, you know, like that, but you know, I hear this every now and then. I don't hear that kind of news every week. So that's cool. So guys, I want to know like what's going on with you? Like, it's been a while. Like, let's start with John Murphy. Like, What have you been up to since the last time? So last time you came on the show, let's see.
I had just finished my coaching program with 2X.
Right.
And you wanted to find out if it went great or if it was a huge waste of money.
Right. People are reaching out to you. People bring that up to me a lot. They say that that was really inspirational, because I think a lot of people get into the situation where you were. Like, we started this business not knowing anything about business, really. It was just this kind of side hustle thing. Like, is this going to work or isn't it? And then it's like, oh wow, it really does work, but holy crap, now I'm busy, I don't know what to do.
Now you're a CEO, you have to figure it out. And after those podcasts, I just wish 2X had an affiliate program, because the amount of people that said, reached out to me and said, you know, is it worth it? You know, it'd be like, and you know, I recommend their coaching program because they helped me a lot, and I still do, but it would have been nice with the amount of people that I've said, yes, you know, it's worth the investment. If they had an affiliate program, I'd be rich.
Nice. Yeah. So how have things been for you lately?
They've been good. It's been a challenge. I mean, I thought 2020 was a challenge with the whole, like, everything being out of stock for the whole year. But we are in mid-July 2021, and some of my suppliers still have not been back in stock. So it's been a challenge. I had very big, like, goals this year. It looks like I'll probably land somewhere around the same as I did last year, which at this stage, I'm fine with that. And I'll just regroup and start again next year. But it's just been a challenge the whole year. It's been, I feel like I'm trying to reinvent the wheel a lot and try to squeeze more blood out of the stone and trying to find revenue paths that I never would have thought of. You know, it's been interesting. I think because I've been put in a corner quite a lot this year, I've actually found quite a few ways that are going to make me a lot more profitable next year. Once everything's working again, things that I would never have come up with otherwise. So I'm excited now for next year. I've sort of just said, okay, let's just get this year over with. Let's just do the same as I did last year instead of trying to 2X it. And then I'll do the 2Xing next year. But I've been busy in the meantime, so I'm okay with that.
I'd echo that, John. And I actually think that next year is going to be a much better year than this year. I mean, I think the supply chains are still very messed up. And I honestly don't believe that the purchases that people are not able to make, that they're going to substitute and not make them. I think they're going to make them. I think it's just the question of, you know, the timing is bad right now because we can't get a hold of stuff. And so, it is what it is, but people will make the purchases. You know, I heard a number that if you look at the financial crisis, at one point household net worth was down $18 trillion. And during the pandemic, household net worth was up $8 trillion. So the buying power is out there, but you can't get stuff into the port of Los Angeles or wherever. And there are suppliers that, you know, can't run their factories. And so depending on where you're sourcing things, and we source stuff, everything from China to you know, Western Asia, Eastern Europe, Western Europe, and the US. And it's just a rolling, you know, set of problems. Okay. So
it'll take a while.
So I'm with you. I'm more optimistic about next year, and also looking at other opportunities. And we figured out a couple of them that are working, quite well. So, I was worried back when I started what it would be like to go through that, you know, kind of the first recession or depression or some such thing, or financial crisis. And, you know, now I'm just very optimistic over the next at least few years. I think the wind is at our back right now for a really good period of time.
Well, people are going to want to know what gives you this confidence.
Yeah. Well, for me, you know, guys, in the wealth and asset management business, and so, you know, kind of, you know, I in my day job, I look at, you know, I look at investment trends, and, you know, I'm a year from retiring from my day job, and I had always kind of presumed that shortly after the next recession, I would probably, you know, move into e-commerce full time, and it'll take me a little bit longer to make that adjustment just because of, you know, kind of, you know, circumstances of where I'm at. But, you know, we're running 9 stores now. And, you know, the financial crisis was, you know, over a decade ago. And, you know, I don't know that we have a decade, and it's certainly not going to go straight up. But, you know, economies are recovering. And, well, look, you know, I think there's, you know, 3 things principally have happened. There's now 30% more people that are going to the internet and searching really in earnest for the first time. Okay. And so, you know, getting in front of those people is, you know, is a huge opportunity. Secondly, you know, e-commerce adoption in the 10 months of last year, you know, the last 10 months of last year, probably e-commerce adoption, you know, probably moved forward a decade in terms of the amount of sales that were done, you know, online. And, you know, so, you know, those 2 trends are just massive. And the third one, I think that's interesting, I'd love to get everybody else's opinion is, but I, you know, clearly the big winner in the pandemic is Amazon. And, you know, we all were, you know, kind of inculcated when we went through the program that we went through that, you know, under $200, people buy stuff on Amazon, and $200 to $500, they buy off affiliate sites. And, you know, we live in this high ticket world that above $500, that's, we own that. I'm here to tell you, I'm selling through affiliate links, $3,000 stuff on Amazon. So, you know, we have a business where we produce content, lots of it. And, you know, we send that content those links to Amazon, and we have supplier relationships where we could fulfill that ourselves, but we'll send it to Amazon, you know, for up to $3,000. If it's ubiquitous and it's sold on Amazon. So, and then, you know, going back to John's point, the other thing that we're doing, you know, off of that content production is that, you know, now on our blogs, you know, we're running ads. And so we have two sources of revenues in addition to our drop shipping, which is Amazon affiliate and other affiliate programs. And we're trying to develop those. Plus we have ad revenue. So, you know, I'm trying to do the three-legged stool, you know, three different types of revenue. But I think people are incredibly comfortable now buying things on Amazon. And for the people that are just focused on drop shipping out there that aren't, you know, taking advantage of all of these new people and supplying them with the information that they're looking for, with all of those questions, you know, Google's favorite search begins with how. If you're not answering those early searches and capturing those people and then retargeting them when they come to your store, I think you're missing, you know, missing a big opportunity. You know, it was very, very incremental for many years where, you know, the share of e-commerce was going up, you know, small amounts. And then, you know, last year it just went up a massive amount in terms of the, you know, amount of purchases done online. So, you know, I'd love to hear other people's, you know, kind of, that's my prognostication. So I'd love to hear other people's prognostication.
I'd agree with most of what Mark says there in terms of, you know, where the industry's growing and all that sort of thing. He's absolutely right. I mean, last year we jumped 8 years worth of growth in the industry. So we went at previous growth to 2028 levels pretty much, you know, overnight, more or less. And I'd agree. I mean, I think the outlook's pretty optimistic from my perspective. The one caveat I'd put on that is if some idiot starts chucking bombs around in the South China Sea, then you think supply chain problems are bad now, holy crap, that'll be significantly bad. And it doesn't need to be like a full-scale war or anything. Just a couple of clashes here and there, and no insurance company is going to insure a container ship to go through there. And that's where it all comes from, out of China, right? So, you know, don't being in Australia, we're a bit closer to that action. So, you know, it looks a lot realer from sitting over here than it might in some other further away parts of the world. But anyway, other than that, though, I'm very optimistic. And yeah, look, I think Mark's right on his third point about the Amazon stuff. It's absolutely no surprise that people are becoming more comfortable spending larger amounts of money on a platform like Amazon. I mean, we've known for years in the high-ticket dropshipping world, the rest of the online world's going, oh, no, people won't spend that much money on online stuff. And we're like, yeah, sure they do. You know, we've been doing this for, you know, well, I've been doing it for over seven years now. And people have always been spending that much money if they're given, you know, given the seeing the right thing on a website to make them feel comfortable to buy it and getting the right service, the right offer. And the one thing I'd say though, like I still think if you put up a great high ticket dropshipping site, like a great one that's doing everything close to right, you know, given the choice between that and Amazon, I still think most customers are going to pick the high ticket dropshipping site. The problem is that most high ticket dropshippers are not doing it all right yet, right? And it's part of because there's a lot to learn there, right? You know, and it takes a couple of years for most people to get up to speed with that. But yeah, I think in some respects, I actually think Amazon's dominance is kind of waning a little bit. The shininess has worn off it. I don't actually believe the customer experience is that awesome on Amazon. Like the Amazon interface looks like a dog's breakfast. They only win because their logistics is fantastic, right? And it is. I mean, you can't match that. You'll never match that as a smaller e-commerce business, but the customer experience is not fantastic. And so that's where you can win. And, you know, I think that's absolutely possible, I'm not here predicting that Amazon's dying or something like that. Obviously their size, you know, and the nature of the business means that I don't think anybody's ever going to overtake them. If they're ever replaced, they'll be by something completely different. But, you know, I think there's still a lot of what I see, and, you know, like Isaac, I have visibility across a lot of different small e-commerce businesses. The ones that get it right Like from a traffic perspective, from a conversion perspective, from the offer they have in the marketplace and the way they're serving their customers, the ones who are getting all of that right are absolutely killing it at the moment. You know, stock issues aside, you know, if we put those to one side, and John's a great example of one of these people that are killing it that I see, like when you get into that position, it's for the high ticket products, it's really strong, you know? And some people are doing some really great things in the space.
Yeah.
And I think that'll continue. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I noticed that, like I do feel like, you know, this has been a hard year, but I know I'm doing 10 times better than most of my competitors. So I'm in a privileged position because I did in some ways accidentally get a lot right. So the stars have aligned. So, you know, a lot of things are working out. And I think once we get over this hump, I think it's going to be a lot better as well. And I think even if Amazon are taking up a lot of the market share, that's fine because they're also helping with getting people used to buying online. And then there are stores like ours where we offer a better experience. Once people are comfortable spending a lot of money online, then they're looking for the best experience rather than, you know, who's going to get it to me in one day rather than 4 days.
Yeah. Yeah. And John, I mean, you're very humble there. I've known John for a number of years now, and I don't think you accidentally got it right. The thing I love about John is he hears something to do and he just goes and does it. This is what makes you different, John. I mean, all the things that John's done, they're actually not really secret as such. He just actually goes and does it. Whereas a lot of people, particularly ones he's competing against, they hear the stuff and then they don't do it.
Yeah. Well, I've got, you know? I think on my last count, which I don't count anymore, but I had close to like 200 competitors in the space, and probably 40 or 50 of those were in like the usual Facebook, like drop shipping groups where, you know, we're all hanging out and we're all the same niche, but people just don't do the work. Like one of the big things actually that 2A taught me, or rather than held me accountable for, was, okay, we're having a weekly call. Here's what we've agreed you're going to do. Next Thursday, we're going to go and see if you've done it. And then by God, I swear I'm going to get it done before Thursday. And I got into a routine of, I said I was going to do it, so I do it. And just by doing something, even if it wasn't like reinventing the wheel every week, even if it was just changing that thing that I said I was going to do on the product page, but if I did it just every week, doing and doing and doing and doing and doing, and then when you look back, you've just become a monster. It's just implementing, really. That's all it is. There's no secret sauce.
Yeah, and the two things there that I think are really impressive is number one, you know, when you do something, you don't always know that it's going to work out. So you're taking a risk. Like we make mistakes all the time, okay? And we have to pivot and you know, regroup, okay? And fix what we busted, okay? And we just had something last week where we had, you know, we had to literally roll back one of our stores because we busted something, and we had to go back to, you know, had to get Shopify on and go back a couple of weeks and say, hey, we got to start over again. But the other thing is, you know, people overestimate what they can do in the short term and underestimate what they can do in the long term. And if you're doing something like, you know, every day or week, man, you're compounding at small percentages daily is a massive, massive equation. So, you know, that in itself is just huge. And most people just don't do anything, you know. So I couldn't agree more. That's great.
And I also think that this year, when everybody in my niche and everybody else in everybody's niche, when everybody's out of stock, everybody's just batting down the hatches, went into hibernation and waiting for it to go over, I've been busy. I've been doing things that are going to make me a lot more profit next year with the same sales, with the same sort of business model. I haven't like reinvented anything new or tacked on anything special, but just the things that I've put in place, I think that it's going to really pay off next year. And I know everybody else has just been saying, okay, I'm out of stock, so I'll just pull back on ad spend and just, you know, maybe not answer the phone as much. And then open the store again in 2 months and see if we can pick it up again. And I'm going to be much further out ahead of them next year.
Oh, I love
it. And
that's
just implementing. That's all it is.
So
yeah.
People are going to want to know what are you doing? What are these things that are going to make you so much more profitable? Or is that a trade secret?
I mean, a couple of things are, you know, I might give away the house, but most of it has just been busy. Like, I haven't reduced ad spend for one, because I have a good funnel where I can collect emails, and emails are close to 40% of my revenue now. So emails are important for me. So even if I don't sell them something immediately, I want their email, and I'm open to retarget them on Facebook, and I'm not doing anything special. One thing I have implemented recently, and it won't pay off until I'm back in stock, is I was using Collide as a third-party extended warranty service. Collide is something you can tack onto your store. They offer the extended warranty. They make the profit. It's something extra that you can add. And I noticed that, because if you offer Collide on your store, you can actually mark it up a little bit as if you want. But you can mark it up to 100% if you like, and you can make twice as much. But I noticed that Collide would calculate around 10% per year of warranty of the retail. So like if you sell something for $5,000, 1 year extended warranty would be $500, 2 year warranty would be $1,000. That's already an addition, and you know, it's quite expensive. So even if I marked it up by 10%, I would sell less extended warranties, but I didn't really care, because it was a benefit to the customer, but not to me. It was like, I'll offer an extended warranty because people will look for it, but it's not making anything. So last month I just said, you know, what I'm going to do, I'm just going to pull down Collide. I'm just going to write my own extended warranty, and I'm just going to sell it for the same price. So if I make a 10% profit on a $5,000 sale, but I sell them an extended warranty, I'll make 20%. Instead of 10. So I've just doubled my sales profit. So what I'll do now is, instead of just putting it on the product page, it'll be on the product page. It'll be like a Zipify one-click upsell post-purchase. And if they still don't, and if I still haven't got them in the net, 2 days later, I'll offer it to them with like a 20% discount, because that's all profit. And once I start selling bikes, I noticed that last year when I wasn't pushing Collide, it was just sitting on the product page. There was no upsell to it. I sold $100,000 worth of warranties for Collide. So they made $100,000 in a year. I'm going to sell the exact same product now, and I'm going to push the hell out of it. And we'll see how far I can get it. Because my products have a standard 1 year warranty, but they last a lot longer and people look for an extended warranty. So I've decided I'm going to be the one that's going to give it to them.
Yeah.
And awesome. That's just one way I'm just going to ramp up my profit next year.
Nice.
I've got a few of those.
Nice. Does that worry you about the liability?
I only have six or seven brands, whereas all my competitors have 25 to 30, 35 brands. 30 of those 35 are garbage products. They would be basically the really entry-level products, but they're the ones with the highest issues, the most problems, and the suppliers are really poor. I only sell the really, really good stuff, and the issues, when there are issues, the suppliers are there. So And if there are fundamental flaws with the product, it's going to show up in the first year anyway when it's under a standard warranty. So the few times where I will be replacing a part, I'll happily ship somebody a $50 component if it happens outside of the 1 year. I do it anyway, just to be good, just to offer a good service. Like if something breaks that shouldn't have broken, but they're outside of the warranty, I'll just order from my supplier anyway, just to give the customer a good experience. So I may as well call it an extended warranty and then do it for everybody.
That's awesome.
Hey, and John, what percentage of the purchase price will that extra year be when you offer that? So what are you working with in terms of, and for how long will that, how long will that warranty run?
So Collide were offering 10% per year, and it was a huge Shopify developer issue to try and make it like a rolling calculation of what's in the cart. So okay. I basically just created a product one called 1 year extended warranty and a variant called 2 year. And I just gave it a total. The 1 year is less than 10%. It's about 8%. So it's more affordable than Clyde, but it's all profit. And the 2 year is less than double 1 year. So it was like 379 and 549. So it's convenient to even go for the 2 year.
Yeah.
And I've been selling these products for 4 years now. And the numbers of issues that happen down the ride it's pretty minimal. And we don't replace a whole product. We just like replace the parts. And the parts are not that expensive individually. So like on a whole, it's pretty good. Like the maths works out pretty nicely. So hopefully my competitors don't listen to Isaac's podcast.
Nobody tell.
Look, the good thing is, John, so many people will hear what you just said and do nothing. So you're the guy that's going to do it just like you always are. So, you know, that's the beautiful thing and why I don't worry about, you know, telling people, you know, great ideas on podcasts. Will people rip it off? Most people just won't. Maybe one or two people will, but, you know.
You know, John Warren, I think take that one step further. He's going to be selling it to his competitors. He'll be making the profit on them.
Yeah, well, there's a side hustle for you, John. You're an extended one. You can be the Clyde.
Exactly.
for every other hard-to-get dropshipper.
We'll call it the Murphy, right?
And
it won't be Clyde. It'll be Murphy.
And what one cool thing is that where I was talking with Isaac's partner, Jason, about this specific like product offering, he was saying, oh, that's very interesting. You know, you don't have to pay taxes on that. I was like, what do you mean? And he says, well, because it's not your money, it goes into a separate bucket for a rainy day.
Hmm.
You don't have to pay taxes until you decide that it goes into your profits. I'm like, oh, that's a nice added bonus. I hadn't thought about. So there are things you can do with that. So it's nice.
Yeah.
And I would be a total loser if I didn't take that as an opportunity. If you need your bookkeeping done, if you need some good advice, give us a call.
Just that one piece of advice is going to make me a lot of money. So
yeah.
Yeah. The other thing you might want to think about is stick that into a separate LLC or subsidiary so that if something goes wildly wrong, it doesn't affect your core business. Okay. You know, that might be something to think about too.
Mm.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, basically what I did was I just mirrored my supplier's standard warranty and I just, you know, reworded it to an extended. So basically it's, you know, we'll replace parts that failed basically, which is it's like the numbers are just, it works out pretty well.
Hmm.
So like if I was selling those like $1,100 or $1,000 products that all my competitors are selling, I would not do this because that would cost them money. And I'm not just saying that now to, you know, frighten them off, because the reason I don't sell those products is because of the issues they have. They fall apart after a while. They probably have like a year and one day's lifespan. They'd rattle into pieces later. And I would be very concerned about offering something like that on those products. But what I'm selling, I'm completely fine with. I actually tell people, you don't need it, but you know, it's there if you want it, because they don't need it. The products are good, so. But if my competitors, if they're listening, you sell garbage and I wouldn't recommend an extended warranty because they'll put you out of business.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Ian, I'm curious. You mentioned to me not long ago that you've been on a tear of buying businesses. You want to tell us what you've been up to?
Well, we've over time, we've purchased 24, over two dozen, I guess, businesses. So over the last 5-6 years, a lot of those, you know, because I live overseas, I folded into our bigger sites. And so but they didn't operate independently. And some of them were small and we just closed them down. But I'm also working with, you know, baby boomers, who, you know, kind of who, you know, want to generate semi-passive income. And so I've been working on with some folks one-on-one and helping them, you know, kind of come up this, come up to speed in, you know, learning how to, you know, kind of get into this game, and then helping them find and do due diligence, and then, you know, get operations set up. And so, you know a couple of people that I've worked with that we're in the process of closing one right now. I bought one maybe a month ago from somebody else that you know well. And, you know, anybody who's listening, we take a look quickly and respond quickly and close quickly. So if you've, you know, these are typically people that, you know, don't have the track record of to be able to go to Empire Flippers or you know, kind of one of the big brokerages. It's somewhere generating revenue, but doesn't have the long history. And I've looked at, you know, well over 1,000 stores, you know, and in my day job, I've looked at prospectuses for 4 decades. So kind of, you know, if I have a superpower, it's that when I look at a prospectus, numbers kind of jump out at me and I, you know, dive into them real quickly. And so I get a big charge out of it. And I think that, you know, the market right now is certainly becoming more expensive and going to continue to be more expensive. And people that are building stores, you know, my experience has been that they tend to be younger people that have more time than money, and people that are buying stores have more money than time. And oftentimes the former group, you know, they have another opportunity that comes across their path, and they've built a store, and maybe it's not, you know, 3 or 4 years old yet and has a great track record, but it has value. And, you know, I can help them get value, and I can help someone on the other side who wants to, you know, get into the game and, you know, maybe not pay, you know, kind of brokerage prices and understand what the risk is. I ascribe to the buy then build philosophy. You know, there's a book by Walker Dybul, who I know, who's also a broker at Quiet Light. And you know, I like buying and then building, because, you know, the things that I've bought that have been higher priced and built oftentimes had some pretty significant flaws that had to be fixed. And so, you know, if you buy it earlier, you can kind of catch it quicker and build it your own way. And so that's worked well for me. So that's what, you know, I've been doing for, you know, the last 9 months or so. And so we've closed, you know, on behalf of clients, we've closed 3 deals in the last 6-7 months. And I bought one, a younger site, a few weeks ago, that I think has some of the same demographics of people that one of my big sites has. And so I think that there's some commonality there. And, you know, the other thing is having multiple stores gives me that portfolio effect, where when something's going wrong in my bathroom vanity business, which comes in from Asia, and there's a, you know, 100, you know, huge container ships sitting outside the port of Los Angeles and nothing's getting delivered and sales go to zero, you know, one of the other ones is doing okay, because the product's coming in from Western Europe. So, you know, we're not shooting the lights out on one store, but we're getting nice average, you know, nice average numbers, you know, pretty consistently. So, you know, that's also part of the strategy.
Hmm. Very cool. That reminds me, actually, so this is the second time you've said something that sounds like diversification. You must be a finance guy.
Yeah. It's in my day job. You know, I've worked ultra high net wealth individuals, basically families that I would call have been wealth creators, and they built private businesses and then ultimately sold those private businesses. And in working with people that are, you know, kind of have created wealth like that, or still have a lot of money locked up in a private business, diversification is really the key. You do not want to, you know, kind of take on the same investment risks in your portfolio that you have that would mimic the risks in your core holding. So, you know, I work in the desert in the oil producing area. You know, it would be crazy for us to recommend to people to have more exposure to energy prices, right? Makes no sense. Now, similarly, and, you know, think about this, real estate in that region basically is oil exposure. So that makes no sense either. So it's not just betting on oil, it's betting on, you know, the stuff that oil wealth drives, which is real estate prices. And so, you know, we look to diversify those risks. And so, you know, we're constantly preaching, you know, ways to get people to have uncorrelated returns. The other thing is, I think that, you know, this asset class that we're talking about, you know, e-commerce, high ticket drop shipping, you know, has an amazing characteristic of generating cash flow. And, you know, cash flow, if the, you know, and look, the jury is out right now. One camp says that interest rates are going to, you know, zoom because inflation's going to be out of control. By the way, that camp is out of favor right now, because as we speaking today on July 19th, the 10-year treasury is back down to a 120. Okay. It got to a 1.70, and there were lots of talk about inflation, you know, interest rates going to 3%, 4%, or 5% on the 10-year. That's not happening right now. You know, of course, we're on any given day, we're worried about the pandemic affecting the economy or not. But, you know, if you're in our business where you're selling people in real dollars, you'll keep up with inflation, because what we sell is going to go up and what we collect in terms of profitability is going to go up. But we've got cash flow. And, you know, these businesses, like, you know, these business models, you know, like the Amazon FBA model, where you just stick money into inventory and you hold your breath and hope that ultimately you get bailed out. I mean, does that, guys, that, you know, I'm 64. That's not for me, man. Let somebody else. You know, that's hard money. Okay. I want nothing to do with that. So, you know, I love this business model, and I love all of the characteristics of it, you know, high dollar profit margins, you know, cash up front, you know, no inventory. Come on. I mean, you know, it all works for me. So the only overlay that we put on it, Isaac, is that I like to diversify. I honestly am not bright enough to tell you exactly what's going to take off next. So I can't design the next great product that I manufacture in China and figure out, you know, how I'm going to make, you know, how I'm going to rival Bezos or somebody. That's not going to work for me. So I like to have, you know, several buckets out there. I like to be working on several things, because, you know, kind of my brain works well like that. When I'm toying around with one of the stores, you know, it's something that might work there might work well in one of the other stores, or it may need to sit and gestate and I should go do something on one of the other stores. So that, you know, that works for me. Maybe it doesn't work for, you know, the other guys here, but it works for me.
Hey, we're going to take a quick break for a message from today's sponsor. This episode of Next Level E-Commerce is brought to you by Ian Bond of Professional Website Investors. I've known Ian for several years now and have been inspired by what he does, which is why he's been on the podcast 3 times now, and I always get great feedback on his episodes. Ian works one-on-one with executives seeking to acquire cash-flowing e-commerce sites through a high-end coaching program with very limited capacity. He has personally acquired over 20 e-commerce sites, so if you want someone with experience to help you acquire your next cash-producing asset, get in touch with Ian at ianbond@professionalwebsiteinvestors.com. Also, he and his buyers from his coaching program are always looking for businesses. So if you are looking to exit your e-commerce business, get in touch with Ian. He and his group are interested in sites that are established, but are also open to younger sites that are revenue producing, which may or may not meet the criteria for some of the well-known brokers in the space. And you can, of course, save the broker commission by going directly to Ian. And on a personal note, Ian is the guy I send people to when they tell me they're interested in selling. That's been true since long before he asked to sponsor the podcast. So if you're interested, contact Ian directly at ianbond@professionalwebsiteinvestors.com. That's IANBOND @professionalwebsiteinvestors.com. And now, back to the show. You were saying earlier, before we get to that, what do you think of this? Mark Cuban says, I don't know if this is a direct quote, but he says, diversification is for losers. Ray Dalio says the secret to wealth generation, the secret to whatever it is. I don't know what the direct quote is. He says diversification is everything. So who's right?
they're talking to different populations. You know, yeah. Cuban shot the lights out and then took all of his money off the table and actually shorted the company that bought his company. Okay. All right. And then he bought a basketball team. Okay. And Dalio talks to sovereign wealth funds that are just trying to, you know, grow their, you know, massive piles of assets at a reasonable level to fund, you know, kind of what the those sovereign wealth funds need to fund. So they're talking to different, you know, kind of populations or different special interest groups. You know, I think, you know, if you are, you know, a younger person focusing on something where you're highly focused, you know, makes an enormous amount of sense. You'll make more money if you focus on it. And if you're right, at the point where I'm at in life, I think, you know, I would tell you that having as much of my assets as I have in e-commerce is a fairly large focus. Okay. Now, the fact that I'm diversified, maybe it dilutes it a bit, but you know, I have a very big bet in my asset allocation in, you know, online investments. So to me, that's my big bet. Yes, it's diversified within that, but that's a big bet for me. So I think, you know, you have to look at who's saying it and why they're saying it and, you know, who's talking their book, right? And, you know, Dalio's talking his book. He's talking to the sovereign wealth funds. And, you know, Mark Cuban's book is a little bit different, you know? So, you know, they both make sense. But, when, you know, you're a younger person, you know, put all the chips in. You know, I have a daughter who, started the pandemic, right out of college, 6 months working for Hearst magazine. And, you know, she, at the beginning of the pandemic, she was schooled at Hearst, and they went and they heard about this new thing called TikTok. It was going to be a great new medium to advertise on. And she started a TikTok, doing TikTok in end of March, beginning of April of 2020. She now has 400,000 followers. She just quit her day job. She's earned nearly six figures this year. She's got brands coming after her. And I told her to quit her job, go all in, you know, push all the chips to the middle of the table. And she's getting sponsorships for $7,000 a video, you know, with her current count of 400,000 followers. Wow. and 20 million likes. And I told her, so yeah, she should go all in. Okay.
Wow.
And so I believe that. So
what, what kind of videos and products, what's her kind of?
Yeah. They all do something different, but you know, she lives in New York City. So at the beginning, she started to make fun of different establishments in New York City and different things that people did, you know, coming out of college, and she made fun of different fashion brands, and she made fun of lots of different things in good nature. And conversely, she did some things that were, you know, very complimentary to people. And she did some things that are very entertaining. One of my favorite videos, one that I'm really proud of, she did one like the three things that they never taught you in college that they, you know, they should have spent some time on. It was, you know, it was like taxes. It was like your retirement plan options. And I forget what the third one was. I mean, you know, and you know, she got a couple million views on that, you know, and it made a lot of sense. And, you know, TikTok is its own world. So, you know, there's, you know, different things that are, you know, running through that, but, you know, she's found that. And probably the thing that is probably the, one of the things that she's done that has gotten her probably the great, you know, now that she has a following, she implemented something where she does a day in her life, particularly on the weekends, where she goes and gets a cup of coffee and meets friends for lunch and stuff like that. And all of the brands just want to be featured kind of like in that period of time. And, you know, no big product push, just like, you know, put me into, you know, kind of your day. And that's been incredibly successful for her. But I will tell you early on, the haters, it was brutal. She had lots of, you know, she had lots of problems, and, you know, And, but, you know, she persevered. And, you know, a lot like Isaac Smith there, you know, she just kept producing content, you know, terabytes of content. I mean, lots of content. So publishes every day,
wow,
twice some days. Yeah. So, but, she's totally focused on that. And she, you know, said to me a couple of weeks ago, "Dad, I've got to quit this job I'm in because I don't have time for my own brand." And, you know, I've been waiting for her to say that for, you know, a couple of months, because you could see the collision, you know. Mm. So for what it's worth.
Good for her.
Yeah. Great, I'm going to go see her in a couple of days.
Nice.
Yeah.
You're going to be in her next video then.
I've been mentioned in a couple of those, John. And yeah, it's uncomfortable, you know, to say the least. I'm going to meet the boyfriend is what's going to happen this time.
Wow.
Well, I think diversification is definitely something that's on my radar now and for the next 12 months as well, because while I was like last year solely reliant on organic traffic, I've been putting more legs under my table just for the one store. Like adding, now that I've got back into the good books with Google and Facebook, and I've been, you know, running paid ads for a while now, and I've been trying to do other like partnerships and, you know, affiliates, and trying to put lots of legs under that one table. I need to do the same thing on a broader scale. So the e-commerce store needs to be one leg under the bigger table, and then I just need to find other streams of income, because if I was just starting out last year, I probably wouldn't have made it to the end of the year. But luckily I'd already built something before that happened. So I think for me, diversification is just something that needs to happen, the sooner the better, for me anyway.
I think going back to those earlier quotes between Cuban and Dalio, it's all about the context, right? So if you're talking to somebody who's just getting started in e-commerce, right, and this is a mistake a lot of people make, or they're doing high-ticket dropshipping, for example, which we're all familiar with, they're at the start of their journey, diversification outside of your business is probably the worst thing you can do. So what the mistake a lot of people will make is, oh, I'm making a couple of sales now, I'm going to go and start another business.
Yeah.
That's literally the worst thing. You don't want that. You need to have one thing. It needs to be about this one thing. But within that one thing, you should be driving diversification. So like, as for example, another mistake people make is, oh, I'm good at Google Ads now, that's all I'm going to do, I'm going to go and start another business that relies just on Google Ads. Mm. Whereas they should diversify things within their existing business, more traffic sources, more products, start branding your own products, and get good at that stuff. And when you're good at that stuff, say, for example, like John is, who's a bit further down his down the track, and Mark as well, who's been doing it for years and years, then is the right time to say, okay, now I'm going to diversify on a broader scale. I'm going to start building a portfolio of businesses, and then you diversify. When you get better at that, you diversify. Now I'm going to bring in other sources of, you know, income. And outside of that, you know, Mark's got content businesses and all of that sort of thing. So I think you do have to focus on one thing for periods of time, and then you go through a phase of a bit of diversification and focus and then more diversification and focus, right? Because you still need to get good at something, and you can't get good at something if you're trying to do lots of different things. Most people aren't capable of that. You need to be able to focus as an entrepreneur, right? And so the people who have built big things weren't trying to build five things at once. You know, Zuckerberg didn't try and build five social media networks at once. He built Facebook, right? Cuban built Salesforce, right? Like they weren't building multiple things at the same time. And I think, you know, obviously those are really big examples of really big companies. But yeah, I mean, I talk to people all the time. They're like, oh, is it time to start another business? And and they haven't even made 10 grand a month in profit off one business. Yeah, and I think that's the worst thing you can do for a number of reasons. But so I think, you know, diversification and focus, they're both things you need to do. It's just you need to do them at different times.
Awesome. Yeah. Totally agreed. So I'm curious, John, What you said you're thinking about John Murphy. You're thinking about doing something else beyond just an e-commerce store. Anything on your mind?
Yes and no. I mean, I don't have a clear path of what that looks like. And it may just be the time after 4 years to have another e-commerce store in a different niche that's less seasonal. And that will be diversification. And I could just apply what I know to that store. Branching out of that would be a little harder because I don't have, I'm not planning on becoming, I'm not going to start offering services because I don't know how to do a lot of things, because what the one thing I did good, I then outsourced everything else and I've just hired in-house good people. So I don't even have like the skills to start offering my services to other people, followed my path or anything like that. So I honestly don't know. I just know that I would feel a lot more financially comfortable if I wasn't solely reliant on just that wall.
Looks like we lost you for a minute there. You can come back in.
Let me just mention. I totally concur with what John's saying, and I think the beauty of, and I'd love to hear John Warren's view on this. I think the beauty of high ticket drop shipping is once you get kind of the team in place, it's just amazingly scalable. You put SOPs in place, all of your processes, your team, just the people in the, kind of your orbit that you can reach out to. I mean, you can run a lot of stores very, very scalably. And so, you heard me say that we're focusing a lot more on content now, and we've added that to our arsenal. But the day-to-day operational stuff of running VAs and running, in bathroom vanities, we run a pretty damn complicated delivery chain, and not a lot of people want to do that stuff. And we've become comfortable doing it, and it's complicated. And yet we know how to do it. And I would never recommend anybody else, go try this. Go find another niche. It's a horrible niche. But get a team in place and put those SOPs in place and train people and empower them. And it's pretty easy. It's pretty simple to scale things. I mean, we've been running multiple stores for a long enough period of time. You do get seasonality, and so that works well for you. You can't run a seasonal store with, with a team. I mean, that's hard. Now if you have multiple stores and you have some seasonality, no big deal. It smooths out. So I think it's very scalable to run multiple stores in high ticket dropshipping.
Yeah, I'd agree. And I think John, before he dropped out just before, was mentioning could he offer services or something like that? And as somebody who's done that at times in the last sort of 7 years, I hear a lot of people say that, I've had some level of success with high ticket dropshipping. Should I now go and branch out into some other sort of online business, offering agency type services or something like that? And I'd say, looking back on it, I can't see why anybody should do that. If you can do the high ticket dropshipping thing, delivering services is a pain in the ass compared to doing just selling physical products. Listen to me, it's a pain in the ass, right? Yes, working with customers can be fun, and it can be good sometimes, but quite literally, it's always your fault. The only way you can scale is by hiring employees, which means you're just hiring a bunch of problems, essentially. And yes, I know Isaac's probably going to say, well, you're not hiring the right people or something like that. And that's true for a lot of people, yes, but it doesn't matter how great people are. There's still going to be issues when you're managing people. And before I came to e-commerce, I had a decade-long career in management. I've done it with much bigger teams of people. It's just opens you up to so much stuff. It just doesn't scale like an e-commerce business does. So if you can do one really well, right, your next move is not to go into some completely foreign and new thing, in my view. Open another one and do the same thing. Replicate. You've got a process that works. You've got a team, probably, if you're doing a few million a year in revenue, let's say. You've got a team. You're going to have a team there. So just do the same thing again. Like, you will be successful if you do it again. Yeah, you might make a few picks that don't work out. But, you know, if you stay focused there and take the cash you're getting from that and, you know, invest it into, like, you know, passive investments rather than, you know, going and trying to start a completely new business model that you have no idea about. If I had my time again, like some of those decisions I made, I wouldn't have done. It slowed me down a lot, going out and trying to branch into things that I'd never done before. I didn't know how to do, when I actually knew how to do one thing really well that I could have just replicated and kept growing, for sure.
I want to underscore something. So from now, let's see, it's been 2 years since I sold my business. And since then, I have not done e-commerce on my own. I've been doing this service thing and this podcast thing, and now talking with hundreds of people at varying levels of success, whatever you call that, and in different places, in different circumstances. I can guarantee you, everybody listening so far has heard you guys say, scale your business, but they have not. Let me say this with certainty. I don't know why, but they did not hear you say your team and your systems.
Oh yeah.
They have to, why? So people, if you're listening, that was a key element of what everybody here said. Just make sure that you heard that.
Okay. So let me help you there. Okay. So when we bought, when we bought our first store in 2015, we bought our first store. We had a girl working for us, and, you know, we go to sleep while the United States is open and selling. And this was a small store. And we bought a month later, we bought our second store, and she couldn't handle the second store. And I'm saying to myself, look, from everything I know, she ought to be able to handle more than the first store. Okay. This is like 40-hour work weeks. Okay. Well, you know, she was cheating on us. All right. So that ended badly. And, you know, what the time that it took my wife to bring her up to speed, because we ran that first store for a while, you know, kind of all of the vendors and all the protocols and all the SOPs that we'd put in place, you know, we didn't have any. She just trained her one-on-one. And when we had to replace her, my wife made the decision, God bless her, she made the decision that we will never, ever do that again. And we put everything into sweet process. And when anybody started with us, they spent a week literally watching videos and you know, learning the systems. And those still live today, okay? And so, you know, yes, you know, you're not going to get it right. Their life is going to change or something's going to flake out. We've had a longtime guy that we ended up paying way too much money, who ended up doing some pretty crazy stuff and cheating on us. And most of the people work out wonderfully, but when they don't, you know, you've got to have all of those things in place. And recruiting the right people is a skill, it's a talent, it's a blessing. It's, you know, it's hard. Okay. It's really hard. And, you know, you want to help them, and there's lots of cool things you can do to help them, you know, kind of make progression in their lives and their careers and make them feel wanted and make them feel part of the team. But you don't go anywhere without your team. I mean, forget it. You know, we were fortunate from the beginning. We knew that we were going to be asleep while the United States was shopping and asking questions. So we had to build it from the beginning. I couldn't agree with you more, though.
Yeah. It's funny, this whole scale. It's amazing to me that when people hear scale, what do you think of? What do they think of? The only thing they think of is sales and orders.
Yeah.
They completely ignore the rest of the business. It drives me crazy.
you'll go blind doing all that work yourself. I mean, you'll go crazy. I mean, you know, life is too short.
Yeah, John, you were on the podcast a year ago, something like working 110 hours a week. And how, what are you at now? You went down to 10, right? That was the big story. But you decide probably, you needed to work more? Like that was too boring? Or what's life like for you now?
No, it's probably still about maybe somewhere between 20 and 40, just depending on what I have going on, really. So my customer service team has grown. There's 3 guys now, and they're all at varying levels of experience. So like if my veteran, who's now my customer service manager, if he's not on, I'll be monitoring my emails and monitoring my Slack channel a lot more, a lot closer. But I'm not writing emails, I'm not answering chat. I don't even remember my login to the live chat widgets anyway. So I'm still not working, but I'm more one eye on what's going on a lot more, depending on, you know, who's on shift. But that's only because, you know, some guys are, you know, newer than others, but that's all. But I'm not doing much of the work at all. I'd say it could be on a very busy day, on a busy week when I'm like really trying to implement something new, it's a 40-hour week. But it could be like 6 hours one day and then nothing the next day. So it's still pretty handy. You know, it's still good.
But John, you're also getting to do the things you like to do, right?
Yeah. I mean, well, what I do now is I come up with like what I think could be interesting marketing experiments, which really, you know, which really, really like it's really lights a fire under me. It's really, I find it really cool and interesting. Yeah. It's like experimenting and it's enjoyable.
Yeah, to me, that's the definition of success, which is being able to focus on the things that you like to do. I like to look at the strategy and think about what the strategy is that I want to do, and then go pursue that and figure it out. And the other thing I love doing is I love looking at the numbers, and I want nothing to do with the customer service or the operations or the bookkeeping. But you know, for my entire career, I've looked at financials. So I got to have the financials. So that's got to get done. So we've got a bookkeeper and all that. But give me the strategy and let me, you know, go, you know, get on calls and learn something from smart people and try and do it for us, you know, one of our stores or, you know, look at new deals and, you know, maybe a deal in the same niche I'm in and maybe I could learn something. Who knows? Right. I mean, that's fun to me. You know, that gets it, but it's not at all.
Well,
the other stuff.
Yeah. Well, I know like this time last year, right now for me, it's 11:23 PM. This time last year, I'd be on a call and answering live chat at the same time, regardless of what day it is, you know, Monday to Sunday. And that's what I was doing. Now I'm having a really cool chat with you guys. And you know what I've been doing the last couple of days or the last 2 weeks now, I was listening to John Warren on another podcast on his podcast. And he was talking about,
like shout out
marketing, the dropship podcast. And he was going on about the, well, just marketing in general. And he dropped a few names, like you have to have this book and you have to look at this. And Ogilvy was mentioned in there. So I actually went and I even got a copy of the Breakthrough Advertising. I've just read chapter one. So thanks, John. But anyway, what I did was as I was going through Ogilvy on advertising, he's responsible for a lot of the, that's the one. And Ogilvy is responsible for a lot of the print advertising, like in the 50s, like all of this stuff you'd see in magazines and stuff. So what I'm doing now is I'm trying to put a 21st century twist on some of his tried and true models. Like he has this really famous advert where there's a Rolls Royce just parked on the side of the road. And there's just this line that says something like, at 60 miles per hour, the only sound this Rolls Royce gives is the electronic clock, you know, to say how smooth, you know, the engine's working. Yeah. And then there's a lot of content below. What I'm doing is I'm trying to replicate something similar for my niche to my audience on Facebook. Like I'm just targeting like the top 1% lookalike audience for my customers, offering something similar, but the bulk of the information then is really good content on my website if they're interested enough to click through. And I'm actually experimenting now with a couple of different graphics and a couple of different audiences to see what wins. And so far, there's a lot of new visitors coming to the website. So Like I wouldn't have had the opportunity to just fill my brain with that sort of stuff. If I was just saying, I'm sorry, it hasn't shipped yet, you know? So, yeah. So this is fun.
Yeah. That was my point. Makes me so happy to hear you say all of that, John. That's exactly what you should be doing. Like everything that John's just said, I mean, great example of one, picking up a recommendation from somebody and doing something with it, right? And actually reading something and doing something with it. But yeah, I mean, selling high ticket products, you know, that long form sort of sales stuff, like that's what you got to be doing. Content, you know, all the things you just said, like anybody who's listening that's wondering how to grow their high ticket dropshipping business, pay attention to that.
Don't pay attention
right,
to me.
It's right on point. Yeah, everybody start DMing John. Yeah. He loves it.
Oh, man.
I'm actually in the process of finalizing a presentation for the next dropship retreat that I'm attending. One of the guest speakers. Yeah, I'm supposed to be doing a presentation. I'm trying to explain. I have to try to document my SEO strategy. And I just realized I've never actually written it down anywhere before. It's just, okay, I've learned something, I'll just go and do it. But I've never had to explain it to anybody before and not in a like a visual presentation way. So that's been interesting. But that's cool also. It's nice to actually have it. If I can document it, then maybe I can actually give it to my guys as well and have them there do some work.
There you go.
Yes. But so, yeah, so it's all fun.
That's awesome. Well, guys, I think it's announcement time. I don't have a huge announcement, but you know, we started out talking about doing 100 episodes. Do you know what is it? Let's see. I think it was October 22nd, so something like that, 2019, that I started this, and I have not missed a single week since then. Not a single week, every single Tuesday. And so that doesn't actually equal 100 because I did like a month or two with two episodes a week or something like that. But first of all, that feels amazing, but also it's pretty tiring. So I'm actually going to take a break. I don't know how podcast people do this because I see sometimes they just keep going. Sometimes they do like seasons. Haven't quite figured it out, but I think I'm going to take like 2 to 3 months of just a break. You know, people will ask me like, what do you love about this and what do you not? I'll tell you what I love about this is these conversations with you guys. And I love the interaction with the listeners when they listen. So if you're listening, send me a message. Nothing makes my day brighter than getting a message from you listening. Do you like what you're listening to? Do you not? Reach out. So that's what I love. I'll tell you what I don't love is Thursday and Friday feeling like, oh no, Tuesday an episode has to drop. All right, let's do this. It's the editing and all of that. The rigor, which is important. I think habits are good, but sometimes you need a break. So I'm going to take a break for a couple months.
Maybe you should take some of your own medicine and hire a good team to do all of that for you.
Yes. Touché. I knew that was coming. Yeah, I do have some help. But the thing is, you need revenue. And the way this is structured right now, this doesn't produce revenue. And yeah, I know there's ways. I send people to the bookkeeping stuff. I send people to the team building stuff. By the way, I didn't mention, some people don't know all that I've got going on. We've got bookkeeping, right? We do your books. We also have a team building coaching program. So like Ian, you mentioned you had a terrible experience with a team member and you've also had great experiences. What's the difference? How do you actually do that? Well, we have a system and we can teach you. So reach out to me if you want to learn how to do that, how to have a great experience, get amazing A player rock stars. Yes, shouldn't I do that myself? So we do send people to those programs from the podcast, but
the economics just don't quite work out for taking my own medicine yet. I don't do everything. We do have a team who helps me do with the uploads and stuff, but yeah. But I'm going to take a break. So I guess the announcement is I haven't decided whether it's 2 or 3 months. I'm going to just take it easy. I'm still going to do some interviews and hopefully I'll get a nice long backlog that to build up between now and then.
Hey, I just wanted to jump in here and clarify a little bit about exactly what I'm doing, what's going on. So I'm going to take a break for 3 months. Why not? Give myself a real break. I haven't had a break at all, like a vacation since I started this thing, and people need that. Anyway, so expect in October me to come back here with new episodes. So I've got another episode, a newly recorded episode coming up next week. And then after that, each week for the next 3 months, we're going to play some of the listener favorites from the past year and a half. So don't go anywhere. If you haven't listened to all the episodes, I'm sure you've missed some gems in there. And if you have listened to them, like I have, I mean, I've been part of the conversation. It's a good refresh to go back and listen. There's some really good knowledge in there. So that's it. Now we're going to go back to the conversation. Also, I'm moving not far away. You can probably see the boxes in the background here. Yeah. We're building a house. It should be done in 2 weeks. Ready to move in.
Wow.
And did you design it?
No. Never again. For those of you who don't know, I used to be an architect. And never again.
Well, what you need to do is put together a list of things, high ticket things that you need for your home and put that out to your friends here.
you can
get some really pretty good price, some pretty good deals, I'm sure.
I hear there are a lot of people in the home furnishing space.
I didn't even think about that. I let my wife do everything, pick it all out. She loves that. I should have thought of that. We've already got, new house. You can't just take your old furniture, right? You have to buy furniture. Yeah.
Well, that's exciting here.
Yeah. Thanks, yeah. Man. Yeah. We're very excited. Very, very excited.
You're going to have to take that whiteboard.
Yes. The whiteboard comes with me. Yes. That's critical. But
they say moving is one of the top three most stressful events you'll ever do. So the more you can outsource, the better.
Yeah. John just moved.
Yeah. Twice.
Yeah.
Twice in 6 weeks. And I've got 4 kids. That's stressful.
Mm-hmm.
If it was just me, moving's fine. But man, once you add kids and small children into the mix, terrible. Terrible. And all their crap, so much stuff.
No, we're buying a house now. So we'll probably be moving in around 3 or 4 months as well. Mm. We're not going far, but everything still has to go in boxes and trucks, even if it's only 200 meters down there.
Yeah. I've got. I only moved like a kilometer away. Walking distance, but still a pain in the neck.
Well, guys, this has been a lot of fun. It's really great. I love talking to all of you individually, but getting a group call here, this has been a lot of fun. Yeah. So thank you all so much for joining me. I really do appreciate it. Taking the time out of your early morning, your late night, and your middle of the day. You guys want to let people know if they're interested in getting a hold of you, except for John Murphy. Let people know what you're doing, except for John Murphy, and how they can get in touch.
Ian Bond at professionalwebsiteinvestors.com.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. For me, John at Dropship Breakthrough. Breakthrough is BREAKTHRU.com. You find me there. Head over to dropshipbreakthrough.com. If you actually want to learn how to build and grow a high ticket dropshipping business, go there too. And that's where most people can find me.
Awesome. I'm just kind of hesitant, John Murphy. Is there anything you want to say?
Just hit up John through Messenger and
John at donotdisturb.com. Actually, I have been recently blogging, like just personal blogging about e-commerce, like just random stuff. I did this, here's how it played out, and there's a picture of me and stuff like that. But it's not like built with SEO in mind, and there's no affiliate links in there yet. But maybe if John gives me one of his affiliate link for his course, I can start plugging it in there, because the name is dropshipjournal.com. John at dropshipjournal.com. I think there's probably less than 10 posts up there, because basically what I was doing was, since I started writing for Entrepreneur and Forbes, after like 10 days, I owned the content again. And I felt like a shame not to then repurpose it, since it got published in like cool places. So I just put up like a Squarespace website, and I just started saying, originally published in Entrepreneur, and then I just copied it over there. So I had it in my own little sort of blogging sphere thing, but that might turn into something maybe, like where I recommend courses and software and stuff like that down the road, if it ever gets any traffic or anything. I think I probably get like 2 visitors a month now or something like that. So, it's really just a place for me to park my content, and until further notice, and maybe I can, go back and edit it with affiliate links. So people can go and look over there, because that's not very invasive. That won't take any time away from me. So knock yourselves out.
All right. There's an email coming your way this week, John, with a new affiliate program for you, mate.
Good man. Right, get on.
There you go.
Got a new blog post, so.
Nice.
Awesome. All right, thanks. Thanks, guys. And for the listeners, thank you for listening. This has been great. I'm not going anywhere. I'm just taking a little break, and we'll see you soon. Actually, I didn't know exactly what to think of this. Like, what do you do? Do you just like have a no episodes and you just go to the bottom of everyone's podcast player? Or do you put in like classic episodes and annoy people that way? That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to put in classic episodes, because everybody listening, most of you haven't listened to every episode, and there's been some really good ones that you've probably missed. So I'm going to replay some of the greatest hits, I suppose.
That'd work.
Good idea.
Yeah, just put up an intro and then play the original.
Yep, that's exactly the plan.
Nice.
All right, guys.
It's been an honor.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Yeah, thanks, Isaac.
All right, that is it for today. Thank you so much for listening. I really do appreciate you. And if you could do me one favor, I would really appreciate it if you could leave a review on your podcast player of choice. That will really help us get the word out and get more listeners to this great content. Also, if there's ever anything I can do for you, please don't hesitate to reach out to me. I love hearing from listeners, and I just love helping in any way that I can. So please, yes, you, don't hesitate to reach out. So that's all for us today. Have yourself a great week, and I'll see you back here next Tuesday.
Thank you for listening to Next Level E-Commerce. Be sure to subscribe so you won't miss out on the next story.